Well, we are on our ninth of ten, and the ninth is found in Exodus 20:16. It says, "Thou shalt not bear false witness against thy neighbor." You know, I think this particular one. Remember, the first four are about our relationship with God, and the last six of the commandments are really about our relationship with others. And I think that when we look at this ninth commandment, I think that we find that it's a twofold between us and man. It's intended to help us protect ourselves and our own character, and it's also intended to protect others from defamation of character in and of itself. And so it really is about a relationship between us and our neighbors, our family, colleagues, or coworkers, or whatever. And I really think that this particular one is really about character, and it's the ability to determine right from wrong in our lives, and then to act accordingly upon that information. And so, what we're going to do is we're going to look at the snippet from the video I am. And as you look at this, though, I want you to kind of make mental note of how do you think that the characters lie in this? What did they do to justify their lies? And how did their lies come back to haunt them? Because I think at the core of lying, bearing false witness against individuals, there are consequences to it. And so again, how do the characters lie? What is their stance for justifying their lies? And how did their lies come back to haunt them?
Previously, on the 10.
You actually told her she'd only be gone for a second. But you couldn't bring her back, could you?
Dr. Richard Horace! We have a warrant to search this boat!
Apparently, her python of a brother is the sole heir if she's declared dead.
Hold your horses, man. We got a hearing.
That's what I want to hear.
I know that's what you want to hear. The state went into a trust for your sister. None to you.
Mm-hmm.
Should she die before the age of 40, you become the sole heir.
Angelica's oncologist was a guy by the name of Spencer Hamilton, okay? Now, his testimony is going to be critical as to your sister's state of mind at the time of her disappearance.
If he testifies that she's, suicidal?
It seems like everyone in the world has something to say about everyone else. It's become the toxic byproduct of the information age. Who did what to whom?
It's never easy to escape our past, Doctor. The truth is, we are all on the run. But today is the day when it is all caught up to you. Right now. Right now, you're feeling that electric sting running down your spine. The shock. The regret. How does he know? What should I do? None of that matters now. All that matters now is whether you want everyone you've ever met to learn that you fathered a child with one of your patients only to abandon them, or let that secret stay a secret forever.
What do you want me to do?
Testify.
What?
My sister wanted to die.
Why do you care?
You've got far bigger problems than that. Don't you, Doctor? See you in court.
It doesn't matter what he said. It doesn't matter what he offered you. Perjury is a crime, and you will be prosecuted. He got to the doctor.
How do you know?
Should have seen his face. Whatever they got on him, it's good.
So what's the doctor's story?
He says that Vita was depressed from the terminal cancer. Most likely went to an exotic destination and committed suicide or died of the cancer in private.
What if he's telling the truth?
He's not.
Are you willing to bet your career on that?
She's in Mexico. You know it, and I know it.
And she did it to herself. And we're never going to be able to do anything about that. So what if the brother gets the money? The father shouldn't have cut him out of the will in the first place. This whole mess has gotten way too dirty. I say, we wash our hands of it and move on to real criminals.
I can't do that.
No, you can't, can you? And why is that?
They think that they're entitled.
Entitled. Or is it that you believe that Ordis killed your wife? Oh, come on, Jake. How can I send a bunch of detectives in the field if I don't know everything about them?
She was in grad school. She was offered $1,000 to participate in an experiment with Dr. Richard Ordis. He told her that it was an experiment in cryogenic anesthesia, using the freezing of tissue to assist in surgery. He said they just freeze a little bit of her arm, bring her right back. Easy money. She said we could never afford to have a honeymoon. And now we can. And I never saw her again.
I'm sorry.
He covered his tracks, but I know he killed her.
Ordis is dead.
That doesn't change the fact that some rich woman gets to live forever based on the information that was gathered in the killing of my wife!
Jake, it's over.
I, Jake Russell, do solemnly swear.
Hello, Lance.
That the testimony I will give will be the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth.
$1 million. You'll attract too much attention all at once. But after a couple years, you'll get every penny.
I don't want your money.
Come on. That's rash.
So help me God.
But your wife died. I get it. It's unfair. Why be unfair to me? It's my money.
Ordis. Is he in on it?
We'll get the money. If it doesn't go to me. No one. Is that what you want?
Did she really have cancer? Didn't you send her up?
Losing a wife, that changed you, didn't it? Because something has to make sense, doesn't it? It can't be so random that someone like me has everything while someone like you has to suffer so much. Something has to balance it out, doesn't it?
It's justice.
Right, Detective?
Is Angelica Vida dead?
Do you know my father cut me out of his will?
What is in Mexico, Lance?
He was abusive. My father. In just about every way possible. I decided enough was enough. Angelica didn't.
I'm not a shrink.
Ever remarry?
No.
$1 million. I get my money. And you get a new life.
How'd you know about my wife?
You got 90 seconds. That's a bit dramatic, don't you think? You could ask for a transfer.
Why didn't you tell me?
Because you have yet to understand the difference between what is legal and what is justice.
This is not justice.
Really? For Lance, it was. He got what he should have been given a long time ago. It was a good deal he offered you. You should have taken it.
Did he kill her?
No. She wanted to live forever, and he wanted his money. Lance kept her frozen, and she allowed him to declare her legally dead.
You tipped off Ortiz. Then you tipped off Lance. Then you undermined my testimony after I left, didn't you?
What about you? What did you want?
Absolution.
The Bible refers to the ninth commandment as do not bear false witness, but we call it lying. And of all the commandments, this is the hardest one to get away from. I mean, lies are everywhere. We all lie. Even a sweet little grandmother or a precious little child, they lie. When somebody walks up to you and asks you, how you doing? Half the time, you lie. But lies rarely stand alone. They usually run in packs. And it's that first lie that does most of the damage, when we lie to ourselves. The book of Acts tells us about one of the deadliest lies ever told. A man named Ananias and his wife lived in this village, and the people of the village were giving away everything they had to help the poor and the needy. And when I say they were giving away everything, I mean literally they were giving all that they had. So Ananias and his wife think, well, we don't want to look like bad people. You know, we want to give too, but we don't want to give everything. So they devised a plan. What we'll do is we'll give away part of what we have and tell them that's everything. So Ananias goes in before the church and he says, here it is. Of course, it was part. They say, is that all you have? He says, yep. They catch him in his lie, and he drops dead right there. His wife comes in. She does the same thing. They catch her in the lie. She drops dead right there. Now, the moral of this story is not that if you tell a lie, you're going to croak. I mean, if that were the case, we'd all be dead by now. No, the point is that a lie is like a cancer. When it's first introduced into the body, it's tiny and untraceable, but over time it grows and it metastasizes until it devours everything. That is the power of the first lie, the lie to ourselves. You know, Ananias and his wife, they were thinking, what business of it if anybody else what we give? They should be happy that they get anything. And in the movie, Lance looks at his inheritance and he says, hey, if I don't get it, who will? I deserve this. It's so funny to me how we spend so much time worrying about all the lies that other people have told us when the lies that do the most damage are the lies we tell ourselves. You know, when I reflect on my own life, The worst trouble I've ever gotten in, going all the way back to childhood, was always when I believed my own lie. That I was a victim. That I was innocent. That I wasn't going to hurt anybody. Or that I deserved this. One of my favorite scenes in the movie is when Spencer's trapped. Nowhere to look but in the rearview mirror. His life of lies had boxed him in so badly, that's all he was left to. A man staring backwards, always forced to look at his past. On the other hand, there's Detective Russell, a man who's been so wrecked by tragedy, but there he is, hand in the Bible, looking you right in the eye, telling the truth. He could have easily rationalized away Lance's million-dollar bribe like his boss did, but he never believed that lie, and so he never had to tell one. Nothing can trap us like a lie. The lies we tell, the lies we believe. But nothing can free us like the truth.
The interesting comments that are made there at the end, that the power of the first lie, the lie to ourselves. A lie is like a cancer. When first introduced into the body, it is small and untraceable. But over time, it grows and metastasizes until it destroys everything. That is the power of the first lie, the lie to ourself. the metaphor, too, of looking in the rearview mirror, you know, I really like that, too, because when you find yourself trapped in a lie, has anybody here not told a lie in their life? How do you spell the word gray? It's not a trick question.
I thought it was G-R-A-Y.
So did I. I had never noticed it. Huh? Can you spell it both ways? Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. Z-Y, yeah. Yeah. So when you looked at this, how did the characters lie in this? Where were the lies?
Brother was saying sister was dead.
The doctor wasn't owning up to any of his behaviors. So he was just like hiding his life.
So he lied about the fact that the doctor, yeah, the doctor, yeah, right. Denying it, yeah. Others? Yeah, it's kind of interesting. You know, the what's legal versus what is just. Now, there's a contrast in rationalization, isn't it? She didn't deny that it was illegal what was going on, but she'd rationalized as a law enforcement officer that what was happening was just. You know, the people who were hurt in that particular case were really all those that had made their choices. She even went so far as to blame who? Somebody she'd never met before, the dad. Do we see that today when we rationalize things? Entitlement, yeah.
Doctor, her cancer doctor, I guess, and the phrase he used, looking in the mirror, I thought it was kind of interesting that he was put in a position to tell a lie because he didn't want the truth to come out. Mm-hmm. That was kind of, you know, sometimes we, and I made, he made an excellent point about being trapped, and it's the first line, you know, that secret not owning, taking responsibility for our actions lead to more actions, and he was put in a position to where he had to just keep track of his past, and I'm afraid it was going to come out.
You're always waiting for somebody to expose you. Yep. Yeah. I like that. Well, they build on each other. Yeah. I mean, you talk about deceit, you know, and weaving a web of deceit, you know, and typically what traps people is that they get so deep into that web of deceit that they can't even remember what lie they told, and it's their inconsistencies that tend to expose them. Said it's funny how we spend so much time worrying about all the lies other people have told us when the ones that do the most harm to us are the lies that we tell ourselves. So we never want to focus on the lies we tell ourselves, because we're victims. We see it all the time. Before we go any further, let's go ahead and listen to the example he referred to of Ananias and Sapphira. And we're going to look in... Oh, Greg, help me out. Yeah, Acts 4:32 through Acts 5:11. And I want you to tell me what type of lie this was.
And the multitude of them that believed were of one heart and of one soul. Neither said any of them that aught of the things which he possessed was his own, but they had all things common. And with great power gave the apostles witness of the resurrection of the Lord Jesus, and great grace was upon them all. Neither was there any among them that lacked, for as many as were possessors of lands or houses sold them, and brought the pieces of the things that were sold, and laid them down at the apostles' feet. And distribution was made unto every man according as he had need. And Joses, who by the apostles was surnamed Barnabas, which is, being interpreted, the son of consolation, a Levite, and of the country of Cyprus, having land, sold it, and brought the money, and laid it at the apostles' feet. Chapter 5. But a certain man named Ananias, with Sapphira, his wife, sold a possession, and kept back part of the price, his wife also being privy to it, and brought a certain part, and laid it at the apostles' feet. But Peter said, Ananias, why hath Satan filled thine heart to lie to the Holy Ghost, and to keep back part of the price of the land? Whilst it remained, was it not thine own? And after it was sold, was it not in thine own power? Why hast thou conceived this thing in thine heart? Thou hast not lied unto men, but unto God. And Ananias, hearing these words, fell down, and gave up the ghost. And great fear came on all them that heard these things. And the young man arose, wound him up, and carried him out, and buried him. And it was about the space of 3 hours after, when his wife, not knowing what was done, came in. And Peter answered unto her, Tell me whether ye sold the land for so much. And she said, Yea, for so much. Then Peter said unto her, How is it that ye have agreed together to tempt the Spirit of the Lord? Behold, the feet of them which have buried thy husband are at the door, and shall carry thee out. Then fell she down straightway at his feet, and yielded up the ghost. And the young men came in and found her dead, and carrying her forth, buried her by her husband. And great fear came upon all the church, and upon as many as heard these things.
Reactions to that story?
I think one of the interesting things is the reaction that other people had to that, in that when after Ananias, great fear, and then I believe that's also where it says they dared not people to join, and you know they're being held accountable for their actions and their lies made other people take note, because you know it's easy to be in that gray area. Mm-hmm. You know, sometimes we think, well, I don't lie, but you know, exaggerations. We put in a different category, but you know, I think it's interesting that example that the Bible uses really could fall into a justification of a gray area. You know, did they tell, you know, I mean, it wasn't like they didn't have any money or what, I mean, they didn't go steal it. It was kind of interesting that, you know, it, and he even made the statement, what difference does it make whether we give it all, it's ours anyway, and, you know, what business is it of everybody else's? So I just thought that was kind of interesting.
Yeah, the first premise in that particular Ananias and Sapphira is that if you start with a false assumption, you're getting it up there. And if you start with the assumption that everything is yours, everything is God's, and it appears as though that's what everyone else was, that was the position they were starting with in the church. Was Ananias and Sapphira's problem that they didn't give it all? Yeah, but they said they gave it all. That was a lie. And I think that that's so powerful when you stop and you think about that. You know, they wouldn't have, they could have chosen not to do that, but it was when they tried to say, I'm like everybody else, look at me. Why do people lie?
They don't want to deal with the fallout.
Okay.
You know, people react to that and they don't like the truth.
So,
you
soften it.
Yeah, you pat it or you twist it a little.
So, I kind of remember, how many of you remember the Fram oil filter commercial on TV? That's probably a generational thing. But Fram oil filter. He would come on and he would hold up this oil filter and he'd say, you can pay me now or you can pay me later. Remember that? Well, the example you just talked about, bless you, you don't want to deal with the consequences of telling the truth, but ultimately your sins shall find you out. You know, there's going to be an accountability, and sometimes it's more because what is telling a lie say about you? What is the one thing that you can control 100% of? Reputation. Yeah. How other people perceive that character and reputation, I mean, we don't control that. But we do control, by our choices, the character of who we are. And character really is, if you look in a mirror, who are we supposed to reflect? Christ. And did Christ ever tell a lie? Last time I checked, he hadn't. Yeah. In fact, if he did, we're in a whole lot of trouble. We're in a whole lot of trouble. What do kids? Has Paige ever been? Do you have a sense why? Sometimes, yeah. Sometimes it's a consciousness that they were not wanting to get into trouble.
I was going to say, sometimes very young children are role playing or they don't quite get it yet.
We're seeing old face things. Did you hit your brother?
No.
I just saw her. There's a red mark right around here. Yeah, good. What should you do it?
And when kids are kind of confronted and they want to emphasize that they told the truth when they know they've been caught, what do they say? Huh?
I swear,
yeah. Or cross my heart, cross my fingers, I'm telling the truth. Does the Bible speak about that? What do adults do? We may don't cross our fingers. Cross my fingers, hope to die. Adults are not, they think they're more sophisticated with it, but what do they end up doing? What do we end up doing? Yeah. I'm going to be totally honest with you. I always love that one. Because when I hear somebody say, I'm going to be totally honest with you, I kind of go, okay. Yeah. How far back does that go? You know, with regard to that. In the movie, what you saw, the hand on the Bible? I mean, that's in court of law. that's biblical also, because what God told us was that let your A's be I's and your I's A, you know, anyway, be a person of your word and your character. Do kids learn to lie?
Oh, no. You don't have to be taught.
Yeah.
They can learn.
That's their nature. Yeah.
They can learn.
You take a baby who just starts crying, and you think they're hungry. They're not hungry. They just want some attention. It's a way.
Could I have, Brother Kevin, could you read Psalms 58? 3 for us, please. No, just Psalms 58, 3.
Oh,
verse 3.
The wicked are estranged from the womb, and they go astray as soon as they be born, speaking lies.
From the womb. It's the sin nature. Now, it goes all the way back to the Garden of Eden. Remember the principle of what you've heard me talk about before? We've talked about the principle of hiding and hurling. This goes right back to the very beginning, that sin nature, when it was introduced into man. You try and hide, and if you can't hide, you try and deflect. And those two principles are alive and well in lying.
Well, I think it started with lies. Mm-hmm. Well, I've certainly told lies and told to cover up lies. The other hand is that many times we talk about children, we talk about honesty, or I honestly say, and we sometimes talk about children when they're so transparent. They will just blurt it out. And that's, I guess, where my mind was in terms of you have to learn self-discipline, but I think through that we learn lying. Mm-hmm. Because you're not transparent, you don't really say what you really, what's really going on. You know, I mean, there's
social balance.
The nature is there, but I think as humans we almost,
right.
That's where I want, you know, like a farmer, you almost grow it in terms of how we
cultivate it,
yeah. How we treat each other and teach each other.
Yeah, there's no question that we're born with the sin nature, and we lie. But that doesn't mean that. First of all, are we ever going to be in a position to where we have to lie?
Never acceptable. I can't.
Right. Yeah, there's tough decisions when you call the area of gray. You know, we've had some of this discussion before, and there's not, you know, in God's mind, He's perfect, and it's a real clear line. But we really find ourselves kind of sometimes in those situations
that we have to say everything.
Yeah.
And I think there's a big difference. Just, you know, let your yea be yea and your nay be nay. I mean, what you do say, and James, I think, sometimes says, you know, from a perspective, that sometimes it's best not to say anything. So, no, I don't think we have to say everything. I think there's some wisdom there.
Says a fool speaks all of his mind, but the wise man holds it back.
Again, it gets back to that principle. If we're gonna catch ourselves, what should we always filter before we go down a road of talking? What do you hope to accomplish?
Well, sometimes what we want to accomplish is not a good thing.
That's right. But I think that's the point. You ask yourself what is, and then I think you have to ask yourself, is what I'm hoping to accomplish appropriate? So I mean, you do have to take that next
my
step.
Will, am I being selfish?
Right. Right. And I think oftentimes we really find that we are being very selfish. You know, again, it gets back to us feeling better about ourselves. Justifying. Yeah, go ahead.
As I was going to say, if in knowing the Lord you want to edify the other person, those who don't know the Lord aren't going to have that in front of them. And I think sometimes, actually, I've seen it where people are counseled, they'll rip up another person so they feel better and get it off their chest type of thing. That isn't what God would say. I think He would, how are you going to edify the other person? Which, that's not a good thing to do.
Right, right.
That's well said.
Never acceptable to lie.
Well, let me ask this question. If we're going to reflect Christ in a mirror, is it ever acceptable for Christ to lie? To be fair, there are situations that I'm sure that probably, if not all of us, many of us have lied thinking that it was the lesser of two choices. But I don't think it's ever right to lie, in my opinion.
I'm not sure that they ever did lie to the German soldiers, but my dad's family in Holland did Jews. And so if the soldiers had asked them, I see it both ways. Because, you know, if we lie, is it because we don't have faith in God to take care of what He takes care of? On the other hand, you look at it and say, you know, you're doing the right thing by keeping the Jews safe.
I agree with your answer, but I was thinking of examples like that. I know a missionary that had say he was going to the UAF for work, but his intent was to spread the gospel while they live out in the country. So it's hard sometimes, though I completely agree with your answer. I was just thinking of, and that's a good example of John being.
And that's one of those, I would never want to condemn those who, I mean, boy, what a heroic thing. Somebody eventually stood up and started, saving people who were in a terrible circumstances. The Bible says, you know, truth is what, you know, where we should be. And there are circumstances to where I'm just thankful I don't have to be there. I have heard, you know, the I think Kevin gives an interesting one, and I have heard circumstances where someone does that and then they start lying about. To justify the ends justifying the means can be a very slippery slope, you know. In saving a life, sure, we would do that. In preaching the gospel, sure, and then we, you know, where do we stop? And I'm not saying those were wrong. I mean, I'm glad I'm not in that circumstance. I don't have to. And it is not for me to condemn their, the Bible is very clear. If your conscience is clear, you know, God is going to, and, you know, that's their heart. And in some ways, you can see the bravery, the standing up against tyranny, and you know the Bible talks about that too. Sometimes we have to take four or five principles and really balance them. But again, I think we would all agree. Your example, if Jesus for good would say, to lie to protect somebody. A sin is a sin, and
we quit.
The Bible says a lot about lying, and you know what the commandment says: not to bear false witness against your neighbor, not to tell something that's not true about your neighbor for your gain or somebody else's gain. And I think that's it was probably said that way for a reason. And not that I am justifying lying in Jesus, because we know that other places God hates. One of the things He hates the most is lying lips. So
that was my point earlier, that you know, as long as you, what you say about your neighbor's the truth, it's okay. I mean, we can take that commandment, and I think it is interesting whether that was God's intent or not. It is interesting the way it's worded. There are many other places to talk about truth in the Bible. So, but that one that sets up these boundaries to protect us is worded in a very unique way. He doesn't say, thou shalt not lie. I think that's the intent there. But the other thing is, all of those in dealing with murder and coveting another man's wife and all these have to do with hurting others for our gain, and or for our a purpose that we see. And I think this is the same thing. Bearing false witness, why would we do that if it wasn't for some kind of self-gain? And they all tend to go to that direction. So in other words, you know, we have a responsibility to reach out and not to do harm to our neighbor. That doesn't mean if I don't do harm for them, then I can sin. That's not, I'm not justifying sin. But I think there's an interesting context that those are all set in.
Interesting point. Sometimes, term we hear a lot is situational ethics. And that's a little bit of what we're talking about in both the examples that you gave. Situational ethics is kind of interesting because it kind of gets at a little bit what you said. It comes in three forms. There's the individual. Take the same situation and you apply it to an individual. You can divide it to apply it to an organization. And then you can apply it to a society or a country or a nation. And based on that situation, you know, our ethics, our scholars have told us that you can come up with different answers and it's okay. For me personally, I understand that tear, I understand that there, and it's not a bright line. And you know, I know God has the perfect answer for it, but in my wisdom, in my finite mind, I can't, you know, it's easier for me to break it down into individual, organizational, and societal ethics when you talk about lies, because it's okay in an individual basis, it's probably not okay. We can use the 10th commandment or the 9th commandment because it's about relationships with one another. And you get into an organization, it's a little different. Then you're talking about a nation, takes on a whole different plane. But again, the further you move from that one individual, the more you depersonalize. And it's really not about that relationship one with another and your neighbor, per se.
But it becomes a very slippery slope.
It does.
And, you know, then we judge when to and when not to. And I think the Bible just says the right thing to do is true.
Absolutely. And we, there's many verses, as you suggested, and there's lots. I'm going to read just a couple things as our time is up. These are things I wrote down. Reasons people lie. Children to keep out of trouble. To protect one's image for personal gain, to get ahead. How do the people do it? Sometimes it's an overstatement. We embellish the truth. Sometimes we tell half-truths. I didn't lie. I just didn't tell the whole truth. How many of us have been there? Yeah. Silence. Silence in of itself can be a lie. For the fun of it, we suggested with some kids, sometimes just to get a reaction. What happens when one keeps his or her word? Yeah. When you know somebody and you know that when they speak, you're going to hear the truth. Trust. Trust is so important because that's what the foundation of any relationship is based on trust. And so that's why we need to start with ourselves and say, what lies have we told ourselves that we believe that allows us to go down that slippery slope? And then we focus on justifying the lies we tell ourselves. I would encourage you as I'm turning papers. Okay, here we go. The inability to control the tongue is a major cause of lying. Many, many verses on that. God desires truth. Psalms 51:6. God desires the truth. Truth sets us free. That was talked about. John 8:32. What is God's character? If you read Hebrews 6:18-19, you'll find his character is truth. The question is asked, Jesus had perfect character in John 14:6, I am the way, the truth, and the life. And then the question is asked in Psalms 15:2. So there's a lot of great things. And God hates lying. If you look in Proverbs, the 6th chapter, he talks about 6 things that he hates. And lying is one of them. Any last comments?
Thanks, everybody.